From bread to beer, yeast has been a core ingredient in the human diet since the start of agriculture. But what is it about yeast that makes it so integral to human food and drink? And are all yeasts created equally? To answer this and more, you are joined once again by the Yeast Boys, Cameron and Cal. And how to talk yeast. How you doing, Cal? We muddled through on that one.
Yeah. No, I think we nailed it. No notes.
Got it first try and no rehearsal required.
Yeah, exactly. And for those of you out there wondering, I would obviously be the ad rock of the Yeasty Boys.
Yes, of course. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Cool. Yeah. Nice. I'm glad we cleared that up.
Yeah, cool. I just wanted that on the record.
That's fine. It's recorded. It's gone to air. It's archived for all eternity now. That is now known.
Cool.
So what exactly is a yeast?
Yeah. So I think often when people we use the term yeast colloquially to mean a lot of different things, but from sort of the scientific perspective, a yeast is just a single cellular organism that belongs to the clade of like funguses, basically. The little one cell mushrooms, you know, they do all sorts of things. But when we're sort of talking about yeast in sort of like bread making, beer making, wine making, that kind of stuff, we're typically talking about a specific guy called Saccharomyces cerevisiae. There are some other yeast species out there that do all sorts of other interesting things, but that's the one we're typically sort of talking about. And, you know, like most funguses, they exist as things that help things get decomposed. So they break down things like, you know, cellulose and sugars and stuff like that and metabolize those.
So yeast is a bit of a party animal, enjoys a lot of things, a bit of a fun guy. So give us a refresher on why yeast produces ethanol, which is so important to production of alcohol.
For sure. So the specific thing with sort of like, I'm going to say the word metabolic pathway way too many times this episode, but
Ready, folks.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting stuff.
He's going to lead us down the metabolic pathway of life. Get ready.
But in the simplest terms, things like trees and plants are usually made out of, cellulose compounds, which are basically like chains of sugars. So when you have a simple sugar, like a glucose, a yeast can eat that and it breaks it down. And then out of that, it releases two things. One of those things is carbon dioxide, which I feel like everyone sort of knows what that is. And the other one is ethanol, which is responsible for alcohol. So this is sort of why, you know, things like beer get carbonated. It's what gives breads that sort of like lift and rise. And obviously it's what's responsible for the alcoholic content of beverages like wine and beer.
Is there a difference between the yeast in beer and bread, or that go into, and is there a different yeast that go into wine, or is it all kind of the same strain?
Yeah. So there's sort of, I guess I'll cover the bread part first. When we sort of think about like sourdough starters or baker's yeast, that is typically Saccharomyces, but it's often, especially with sourdough starters, those are usually cultures which also have things like lactobacters in there, which are basically little bacteria that produce lactic acid. It's why sourdough has a sort of like sour tanginess to it. And there might be any sort of other number of like little microbial guys and different kinds of yeast that might still be in the Saccharomyces family, but aren't necessarily what we think of like as the classic cerevisiae. In brewing, this is somewhat a debated topic, but sort of you've got your ale yeasts, which are, you know, they like to be warm. They like to ferment on the top. And that's your classic Saccharomyces. Then there's sort of your lager yeast, which can go a lot colder. They like to ferment on the bottom. There is some debate whether things like Saccharomyces carlsbergii, which is, you know, like literally the yeast they used to make Carlsberg and stuff like that. Is that a distinct species, or is that sort of just like a different microbial pathway for the same sort of yeast, just in different conditions? I'm not going to get into that because I don't know the answer. But they're sort of similar enough that we can sort of group them together. But when we usually start talking about winemaking, what we're actually more interested in is the particular strains of yeast. And these all have really exciting names like WR1074. You'd like, they're really easy to remember, really, really cool thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's a real astronomical stellar survey catalog named star of a situation.
Exactly. But sort of broadly, they get categorized into a few different classes. So you have things which we call like champagne yeasts. And these are yeasts that specifically, when they're producing carbon dioxide, they do so in a way in which allows this like really fine, but persistent beading of the carbonation of the finished wine product. And so what we're basically doing in a lot of winemaking when you are inoculating with yeast is just selecting a yeast that is going to have whatever qualities you sort of want to see in the final wine, you know. There's yeast that are just really good at like powering through, going really, really fast and getting a really high ethanol concentration, which is great if you're trying to do stuff quickly. They tend not to be super good at producing a lot of these precursor compounds that are important for like the actual aroma and stuff in wine. So if you're making something that's maybe a more sophisticated product, you'd probably be looking for something that is, you know, going to be going a little bit slower and a little more gentle and is going to produce more of these sort of aromatic precursors and stuff like that. There's also just sort of you get what we call killer strains, which basically there's yeast sort of everywhere. That, you know, that's how the world works. They're on everything all the time. They're even on you right now. Don't think about it too hard. But we get what we call killer strains, where you'll let the ferment sort of kick off with whatever ambient yeast is sort of naturally there in the environment. And when you sort of get the ferment stabilized and rolling, you'll put in this strain, which is a really good, strong fermenter, and we'll just out-compete everything else in there so that you sort of do have a little bit of that wildness. You have that bit of sense of terroir in that fermented product, but you still have that really consistent commercial endpoint to it. So you can kind of get the best of both worlds by having multiple inoculations or inoculating after a ferment has started there.
I guess my last question is, are there any non-Saccharomyces yeast that are important to wine, or is it mostly that specific strain of yeast?
There's a few others that we talk about. The big bad boy is the Brettanomyces. These are surprisingly ethanol-like tolerant yeast, which most yeasts aren't. And they sort of tend to come into ferments when you're sort of in that last like 10% left of sugar and still drying out a little bit. They're really, really common, especially in sort of like French and old world winemaking, for giving that sort of earthy, more rustic sort of flavor profiles there. But they are also responsible. These are also responsible for aromatic precursors, but a lot of those tend to be seen as faults. You know, your 4-ethyl phenols and your 4-ethyl guaiacols. Brett has a lot. There's a lot of people who are a lot more tolerant to it, and there's some people who aren't. You know, there's a lot of French wine regions who, if the wine doesn't have traces of Brettanomyces in it, that's not considered authentic. But if you did that wine again in Australia, no one would ever sell it because it's considered faulty. So it's kind of a little bit of a complex one there. And you also get things like your floor yeast, which are used in sherry productions, which are a lot closer to sort of something like a SCOBY in kombucha production, where basically the point of these yeasts is that you're doing it in an environment where, you know, you're not fully topped. You've got a little bit of airspace in your barrel there, and that yeast forms a film on the top that stops more negative microbes from getting in there and allows this really slow oxygen exchange. And that's where you get that sort of, I mean, it is a yeast characteristic, but that sort of like quite nutty walnuts, dried apple kind of thing that you see in a lot of dried cherries is because of that floor yeast, not just from the process of them going through their sort of metabolic processes, but because of that slower oxygen exchange and then that protection from sort of some of the more nasty spoilage bacteria that exist out there.
Fair enough. All right. And my, as usual, the last question is, what yeast-based byproduct liquid are you drinking this week?
I'm drinking lots of yeast-based products. You know, I tend to most weeks.
Love a good yeast broth.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm going to shout out, speaking of sort of like these more oxidative handling things, I'm going to shout out the Mighty Isle Piccadilly Chardonnay. Mighty Isle was the guy who I made some wine with earlier in the year. And this is very much, I think, an evolution on the style of Chardonnay that we were seeing a lot of in the last 10 years coming out of the Piccadilly Valley, moving away from that sort of really lean, taut, acid-driven style, something that's like quite rich, it's very saline, it's like got a little bit of crunch to it, and it's a lot more structured. Does see some intentional oxidation there as well as part of that process. It has a lot of these sort of like really rich, you know, almost getting to that sort of Vegemite, which is a you know, made from yeast for those of you who don't know, almost getting to that sort of Vegemite toast level of sort of like salty, crunchy yeast autolytic notes. Really, really fun. And yeah, I'll put a little link up to that in the show notes today.
Lovely stuff, Cal. A yeast full, I don't know.
you could have just led with it.
Thanks for coming on the show. And then, you know, that's when you say that's the yeast I could do.
There we go.
I got to play the other side. I got to play both sides just to make sure I can get all the jokes out. Ring all the yeast based puns out of this one. What's on the cards for next week, or is it going to be a surprise for both of us?
No, I think we're going to probably continue on this, and I'm going to start talking a little bit about those lactobacters that I mentioned before, because there's lots of sort of fun things they do, and they've got a pretty wide application in other things, like, you know, like yogurt and lots of other delicious fermented food and beverage products.
We're continuing on down the microbial pathway next week. Yep. Lovely
this
stuff.
This is it.
Brilliant. Cal, as usual, pleasure to have you on.
Absolute pleasure to be here.
Catch you next week.
See you next week.